Hey, everybody, this is the franchise Sam Douglas. Cut the f***ing music. Anytime you want the lowdown on professional wrestling, there's only one place to get it. It's another wrestling podcast.
It's time for another wrestling podcast.
The measuring stick just changed around here, buddy. You're looking at
the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be.
They got the answers. I changed the question.
The cream of the crop.
Nobody does it better.
These are the best in the world, brother. These are the best at what they do.
When we talk about the legends of the sport, there's only two in my book.
Another wrestling podcast.
Another wrestling podcast. Now can you dig that, sucker?
All right. Welcome to another wrestling podcast. I'm Steve Credo.
And I'm Jonathan Benjamin.
And this is episode 98. We're here. We're ready. We're kind of getting over this funky thing everybody's got going around. So today's show could be brought to you by Dayquil or Nyquil or whatever quill that could get us through the show, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. We were out at all hours of the night this past weekend. We got to be a very special part of the Jim Cornette experience, so I think we just got maybe caught something for being out so late, but we definitely want to talk about that. We got a lot to talk about today. We have an amazing guest. Who's that going to be on our show today?
Joining us is the franchise Shane Douglas is going to be on the show today, guys. Stick around for that. It's going to be an interesting time here at the AWP Studios. He's going to be joining us in a little bit. And we're also going to have a little teaser of next week's show. Gangrel is going to come by and talk to us briefly about this weekend. Him and Shane Douglas are doing some shows this weekend, so they're going to both be on the show. Gangrel briefly, Shane Douglas will be here in the entirety, and then next week you can listen to the full interview with Gangrel. But so we got a lot of things going on right now. Like you said, Jonathan, you know, we had a crazy weekend with Jim Cornette. Special thanks to Laugh It Up Comedy Club up in Poughkeepsie, New York. Check them out at laughitup.net, especially Collector's Realm. You can find them at collectorsrealm.net. A great time this weekend, Jonathan. This is what we do. We like bringing things to the area, working with these great companies, and, you know, bringing things that people don't get a chance to see all the time. Or it was definitely a rarity to see a Jim Cornette up here in the Northeast.
Yeah, and you know what? It was, if you like professional wrestling stories told by just one of the most charismatic and hilarious people in the world of wrestling, then you should have been there. It was great. We talked for about 2 hours and then did a meet and greet afterwards. And, you know, I haven't stopped laughing after thinking back about some of the stories he told.
And that's right. You know, a lot of things are happening. So we want to remind everybody, though, please head on over to anotherwrestlingpodcast.com. All of our links are on there. Follow us, like us, subscribe to us, leave us reviews. Anything that you could do for us, we appreciate it. So make sure you head on over there and leave us some love, if you will. Now, Jonathan, we're a two-man team. We're, you know, probably the greatest tag team in the history of the modern podcast era. But there's more teams in the world than just two people. There's been a lot of three-man teams, three-man bands, whatever you want to call them, triple threats. A lot of teams that have always been a three-man group. And we never really talked about three-man groups before.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Back in the day, they even had tag team or six man tag team championships. So we're always looking back and trying to see, you know, what would work today that worked back then. I'm on the fence about this idea, but I can see where a while back in the WWE it may have flown. So yeah, I think we should definitely talk about three man teams today.
Yeah, so without, you know, talking about every team and who they are and whatnot, I mean, we're going to bring up some today, some of the most notable ones, you know, like with Shane Douglas on today, you know, the triple threat. Him, Bam Bam Bigelow, and Chris Candido were the triple threat in ECW. A great three-man team, you know what I'm saying? Even going back to the Fabulous Freebirds, and so on and so forth. We're going to bring up a lot more, and sure, if you think of any too, please let us know, but... Jonathan, three-man teams, how did it work back then? Do you have any, you know, insight you could tell some people about this?
That's right, Steve. It started in the NWA, the National Wrestling Alliance, and it wasn't a huge success. It started in the 70s and kind of only lasted until the 80s. And then it came back into another promotion, and it was briefly revived in 98 by NWA 2000. But it's confusing because we talked about this earlier. The six-man tag team championship really insinuates that it's six people, but it was really for three-man teams. And, you know, if you look back in the NWA, the first people to have won it were Roy McClarity, Pat O'Connor, and Yukon Eric. And the last championship reign was by the Misfits, Harley Lewis, Derek Domino, and Lupus. That was in the NWA 2000 promotion. And also, WCW had something similar in 1991, and it only lasted for a year. So, I highly encourage you to look up that title. It's pretty cool. It says six-man tag team wrestling championship. Some of the teams that won that: Junkyard Dog, Ricky Morton, and Tommy Rich, the Fabulous Freebirds. Really, only four people won that, so it wasn't a huge championship, but it's still pretty cool.
And it blows my mind that they haven't done this in the modern era today, especially with pretty much the overabundance of guys all over the place, especially the WWE. Groups like the Wyatts originally when they were a three-man group. The New Day today. Even when you had the Shield, you had the three-man band. And there's a couple other guys out there too. I mean, it would have made sense to have, you know, these kind of six-man six-man tag team championships playing the part. And, you know, I kind of see what New Day does, you know, but I don't know. I think it would have worked in the past few years, but some of the groups have been broken up or have added more to the group, so they really haven't, you know, couldn't have kept this. But do you think, you know, if they brought that back today, with especially with a lot of these guys, do you think we could have seen at least a handful of three-man groups fighting for these championships?
You know, it's one of those things. Championships help with, you know, putting over people, or people help the championship. So if you have a good enough group of, you know, three-man teams, then it can work. But I don't want this to come back just so they can throw random people together. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, like, definitely.
Right now we've got the Social Outcasts, and, you know, that to me just isn't really working. And I could see that happening whenever – you know, they just see three people backstage that aren't really doing anything, and they throw it out. And I think that in the WWE right now, at least for the time being, they have an overabundance of championships. So I would want them to at least get rid of one or two championships before they brought this back.
Well, I want to argue the point that I, you know, I love championships, and you know, If they had the brand splits to this day, and if we were, you know, a few years ago when the Shield was still a three-man group, the Wyatts were more three, and, you know, you had more established teams that were really, you know, three-man groups, the New Day has done a great job with it. But, you know, like you said, I definitely don't want just guys thrown together. I want it to make sense, you know what I mean? And today, you know, you even have Cody Rhodes with the Ascension, where that team kind of works to where that could be another group. But I'll tell you what, like, If you had brand separation, especially in the WWE, at least, like, to where you had the tag team champions on Raw, and then you remember when they had, like, the world – it was like each show had their own tag team champions, and it was kind of confusing. I think if you have one show with the regular tag team championships, and then have the other show with the six-man tag team championships or something like that, to where at least if it was separated, I think it might work. But definitely, you know, when you have all those titles, it gets confusing. But I don't know. It's just funny in my eyes, because I feel like – we'll see all these three-man groups every so often, and it's like, well, what can these guys do, you know, as a group to say they're the best or win anything? And I guess today they kind of morphed that into just the regular tag team championships. But, you know, I don't know. I think if they wanted something new or different, they could definitely throw this out there. At least maybe even for the women. There's so many women's wrestlers around right now not doing anything. And it's like, sheesh, just give them a tag team championship and give them something different. Or, I don't know. I would like to see it, but it would definitely have to be used right with the right teams and no adding, like you said, just anybody to a three-man group. Like, that group has to be established, you know, like Team Angle or, you know, Demolition when they had Crush or, you know, The Brood, you know, just like guys who are really three-man groups, just not anybody random thrown together. So, I don't know.
Well, you know, to your point about the women's wrestling, they did that for a while. They had the Bellas and Alicia Fox going against, you know, Team Bad.
Yeah, yep.
So, I mean, it's not like a new idea. It's something that they've toyed around with before. I just don't think they wanted to pull the trigger on actually revitalizing this, you know, six-man tag or six-person tag team championship. But I guess, you know, we've mentioned a lot of teams today, but do you happen to have, like, a favorite six-man team?
Well, you know, growing up, like, everybody, like, talks about the Freebirds, but, you know, when they were big, I wasn't really watching it. You know, I wasn't really watching them, so I never really cared too much about the Freebirds. When I grew up, you know, DX, HBK, Triple H, and China were pretty much a three-man team, if you will. You know, the Triple Threat in ECW with Shane Douglas, Bam Bam, and Chris Candido were awesome. You know, I was definitely a fan of them. And I think even old school, I would have to go with Demolition, Axe, Smash, and Crush. You know, I know, I think it was Axe who wasn't really feeling well, or, you know, something happened, but that's why they had to bring Crush in to kind of do the tag team for him. But, you know, I was digging the whole Demolition three-man team. I would have to say, you know, the Triple Threat was one of my favorites in the modern era of three-man teams. But, yeah, I definitely with those three, I would think. DX, Triple Threat, and Demolition.
Awesome. Well, I'm definitely I was digging Team Angle. I really liked Kurt Angle back in the day. Still think he's one of the best wrestlers of all time. And whenever you paired him with Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas, I think that was one of the greatest three-mans ever. And if there was ever a championship, those guys would have won it for sure.
And also, Jonathan, I don't mean to cut you off, but Kurt Angle recently said, too, that he would be interested in reforming Team Angle with American Alpha down at NXT. What do you think about that?
I think that would be awesome. You know, it's one of those things where I don't want to say that Kurt Angle is, you know, at the end of his career, because I think he could probably still do a lot of stuff. But putting him with those guys would help them and, you know, give him a platform to kind of show off and you know, kind of mold them into, you know, the total package, I guess. So I would be completely down for that, and I would love to see Team Angle 2.0 is what I would call it. So I also, you know, we're going to talk briefly with Gangrel. I would definitely be remiss if I didn't talk about the Brood and the New Brood. There's nothing that you can beat with the original Brood, you know, Edge, Christian, and Gangrel. And then whenever they kind of went their separate ways, and Gangrel and the Hardys were part of the New Brood. So I think those are cool. It definitely got everybody involved over, and, you know, that's what it's all about. Like we said, the sum is sometimes better than the separate parts. So I think it's awesome whenever a three-man thing like this happens. You know, we talk about the modern era, and we talk about the Wyatts and stuff, but the Shield was another one that just absolutely took off. Those guys, you know, came out of nowhere. They were three, you know, pretty big names down in, you know, NXT, Florida Championship Wrestling at the time. But Roman was pretty much unknown, whereas Dean Ambrose was Jon Moxley and Seth Rollins was Tyler Black on the indies. So, you know, it elevated everybody, and, you know, look what happened to them right now. So it can definitely work. I don't think that we need the six-man tag team championship, but I'm all about having, you know, three-man teams.
Sure, and if you're listening out there right now, give us a call on our hotline. It's free, 802-297-7672. That's 802-AWP-7672. Let us know maybe some of your favorite three-man groups if we didn't mention it, or maybe we did mention it. Tell us what you think, and we'll play it on next week's show. Or, hey, we're also on Facebook at AnotherWrestlingPodcast.com. We're also on Twitter at AWrestlingPod. Tweet us. Let us know, guys. We want to hear back from you, too, and we'll be sure to respond to you. But, Jonathan, you know, you mentioned it before, the Brood, Gangrel, he's going to be around this weekend, Jonathan. We're going to hear a little bit from him right now, a little sneak peek before next week's show.
On March 11th and 12th, you'll be making appearances for ESS Promotion at ECPW, GCW, and the Wrestling Universe. What do you want to tell the fans about coming out this weekend to see you?
Man, I don't know what I want to tell them other than thank you very much. And I appreciate you coming out and spending your hard-earned money. I know, you know, people work hard jobs. Money's hard to come by. And to come out and spend it on a wrestling show, if you come in to see me or any of the other wrestlers, on behalf of the wrestlers, I'd like to thank the fans. And because we can't do it without you. If there's no wrestling fans, and I'm a wrestling fan. I started out a wrestling fan, and I'll always be a wrestling fan. And I thank other wrestling fans for doing that, because without them, there is no wrestling. You know what I mean? If nobody came to watch it, nobody came to the shows, we couldn't go out there and still do what we do for a living, something that we love, you know? The only other thing I'm qualified for, I've been doing this since I'm 17. This is the only job I've had since I was 18. The only thing I'm qualified for is a bigger gauge. So I bless and thank the wrestling fans so much that I'm able to go out and wrestle every weekend. I got two shows on Friday, a signing Saturday morning, two shows Saturday night, two shows Sunday in Charleston. And that's how most of my weekends are. And like I said, I'm very, very blessed. Very proud and very humble to, you know, be pro wrestling. And I love this career, and I don't doubt it, regret it. I love every minute of it.
All right. Well, we want to thank Gangrel so much. We've got plenty more to talk to him about this coming week. But if you don't listen to the show all the way through, we've been trying something new lately. It's called the Promo of the Week. We spend hours going through some of the greatest or, you know, maybe some of the most unheard promos of all time. And, you know, we're going to try to put some of these up there just to get you going, get you pumped. And right now, here's the Promo of the Week.
Promo of the Week.
Jake the Snake Roberts, the match is at hand.
Well, well, the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. Here we are at WrestleMania, and it's the biggest match of your career. Why? Because everything you stand for is on the line, namely the Million Dollar Belt. Oh, yeah, it can be yours once again. You see, all you have to do to get it back is go through Damien and me. But you see, Damien and I don't forget. We remember all the times you made people grovel for your money. These were people far less fortunate than you. People who could use your money for essentials. And what did you do? You made fun of them. You humbled them. And you humiliated them. Well, now it's my turn. I'm going to make you beg, DiBiase. You are going to get down on your hands and knees. This time, you'll be the one that's humbled. This time, you'll be the one that's humiliated. And this time, you will be the one that grovels for the money. And how appropriate that the money you grovel for is your very own. A victim of your own greed, wallowing in the muck of avarice.
Longfellow couldn't have said it better.
All right, promos of the week are going to be a nice little staple on this show. Guys, girls, everybody out there, if you're listening right now, I want to remind everybody that after you hear an interview on this show, you can also find it on our YouTube page about a week later. Make sure you head on over to youtube.com/anotherwrestlingpod. Subscribe to us so that you can make sure you get each new video that comes available when we upload it. So make sure you subscribe to us, youtube.com/anotherwrestlingpod. But in the meantime, Joining us in the studio right now, the leader of probably one of the greatest three-man groups in the history of pro wrestling, the Triple Threat, we have the franchise Shane Douglas joining us right now. Joining us right now is someone who has dedicated nearly three decades to his craft. He has been a part of nearly every major wrestling promotion in North America, won too many championships to count, and has created numerous history-making moments. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the franchise, Shane Douglas. Shane, thanks for joining us.
It's great to be here, Steve. Thank you.
Now, Shane, you know, on March 11th and 12th, you will be making appearances for ESS Promotions at ECPW, GCW, and the Wrestling Universe. For more information, everybody listening, head on over to ESSpromotions.com. We know you're a busy guy these days, so we thank you so much for joining us today. You were trained alongside Mick Foley by Dominic DiNucci.
Right.
What were some of your initial thoughts about trying to make it as a pro wrestler?
Well, it's funny. I was kind of discussing the other day when I was over in England with a bunch of the seminar students. Mick Foley and I, look, it sounds crazy today and almost like self-deprecating, but at the time, Mick and I both believed, like all the students at Dominic's school, that, you know, we might be able to have a few wrestling shows locally in Pittsburgh, but, you know, we were nowhere near as good as those guys we were watching on TV. And none of us in the school, Mick or I or any of the students, had any inkling that we'd ever, you know, forge a career, let alone have a lengthy career and a noteworthy career. So, you know, both of us, I just talked to Mick about this a couple of years ago, you know, we're both sort of a bit stymied by, you know, that it happened, and obviously thrilled as hell that it did. You know, we both wanted to make a career in wrestling, and we've both been able to do that. So I feel very blessed. You know, somebody told me one time, you know, if you love your job, you have to go to day. You never go to work a day in your life. And as you know, as much as the wrestling business can be tough, I've loved a vast portion of it, and feel like I've never gone to work a day in my life.
You got your start in the UWF under Bill Watts. What are some of the biggest differences from when you started to what you see happening with wrestling today?
We could have a college course on this. the first thing I'll say is the kids today, first of all, are you know, they've had the rug pulled out from under them because they have nobody overseeing to make sure that they learn their craft and master their craft, not just learn it, but master it. The second part is, they are so amazingly athletic, the kids today. When I watch them in the ring, the effort that they put forth is astounding to me. I mean, they work their butts off as far as the effort they're putting in. And the moves and the types of moves that they do are so far beyond what, you know, I was considered a flyer when I first started my career. You know, Brian Pillman and guys like that were as well. Nothing that we did even comes close to what these kids are doing today. And so there's a wide gap in that. But on the negative side, there's back when I was breaking in, the old timers, the guys above me on the card would say, you know, you got to learn to tell a story, kid. And what they were talking about was the psychology. And it didn't make sense at all to me at the time. I thought, what the hell are they talking about? Tell a story. I'm out here wrestling my butt off. And one day the light bulb went on and I got it, as most people either do or don't in this business. And my guess is these kids today are probably a lot smarter than I was, my generation was, because of all this information they have. These kids today will get it too. And my question is, what an incredible product they'll put out wrestling-wise if they do get back to that old school feel of telling the story, the psychology. That's what the fans love. The fans, if you listen to them, like, or if you saw the video of Roman Reigns using the blood packet, which, you know, to me is like the apocalypse upon us. But When you watch that video and you listen to the fans are chanting, "This is awesome," because they think that finally they're getting something that throws back to what they used to watch. And in the PG-13 era known as the WWE today, unfortunately, when those fans now go back and watch that video, if they haven't already, they're going to feel cheated, slighted, and robbed. Mm-hmm. And that's not really what I think any customer base really wants to feel after doing business or partaking in doing business with somebody. So vast differences. But I'll leave you with this, what Bill Watts used to say. Bill Watts used to say, "We're not splicing the atom, we're not curing cancer. Black hat, white hat, that's wrestling." Mm-hmm. And that may be an oversimplification, but if it is, it's not by much. The formula works, it's always worked. Why they've jettisoned the formula, you have to ask Vince McMahon that. I don't understand it. I think that the kids today would pick it up very quickly and do like every generation has done, turn it into their own and make for one incredible wrestling product.
Definitely. Now, after the UFW, you went to work for NWA, working with Magnum TA. This was after Magnum had his car accident. What were you able to learn from arguably one of the most popular wrestlers of that time?
Oh, a ton. First of all, Magnum, Terry's just a great guy. And to see him going to work when most people, you know, me included, probably say, you know, "Oh, this sucks and I'm just going to just, you know, dwell on my depression." Terry came back even at that point and just had such a zeal for the business and for life that it was infectious. It was very easy to catch from him. And, you know, since, I didn't realize it at the time, but since I've learned that at the time that happened, Terry had been in the business for less than 4 years. And when you put that into context, it took me 7 years before I really grasped, you know, that I felt comfortable going to the ring. Mick told me it was about the same for him. In fact, that seems to be like the standard. 6-7 years is like where you finally start back. Steve Austin said the same. But Terry was in for 4 years and had already been a star for several of those years. So if there's such a thing as a natural at something, Magnum TA was clearly the natural and would have been, had he not had that accident, would have been the guy that dominated the world championships at that time.
Sure. Now, fast forward, you were very well known for your time in ECW. How did it feel when you started there and you were able to be more of yourself, if you will?
Well, I felt comfortable. I felt like, you know, like slipping into a, you know, a comfortable pair of pants or sweatpants or something. It was the first time that I was allowed to push the parameters. Up to that point, the business had only seen Shane Douglas as a middle of the card white meat babyface. In those days, you didn't have, you know, most heels were pot-bellied, overlooking, nasty badasses. And, you know, suddenly the business in ECW went in a completely different direction. And, you know, what was black was now white, what was up was now down. And we had a chance, all of us, to push the, you know, push the envelope a little bit and to see where it went. A lot of the things in hindsight, ECW is you know, like become almost like a legend of lore. You know, it was the greatest wrestling company ever. There were a lot of mistakes that were made there. And the key, though, was most people in ECW, Paul included, learned from those mistakes. And so each subsequent week that went on, the ECW product got better and better. And then it became almost a caricature of itself. The last few years that I was there, you know, everybody, you know, where Sabu was the first to, you know, put somebody through a table. Suddenly everybody was going through tables. I was the first to get on the mic with the vulgarities, and all of a sudden everybody was on the mic with vulgarities. Everybody was swinging chairs. And so ECW became a caricature of itself, and it needed somebody to lure that in. Mm-hmm. You know, the microphone should have been Shane Douglas. The table should have been Sabu's. The chair should have been Balls's. Whatever the case, the cane was Sandman's. But in a company like Paul, Bill Watts rather, Bill Watts would have done that. Had somebody grabbed the microphone, but they weren't told to, they'd have caught hell and a fine in the back. Paul wasn't that kind of a leader. Paul led more by, divvying out the ideas and allowing his dressing room to do it, implement it how it wanted to. And most times that worked and sometimes it didn't.
Speaking of ECW, have you seen an influx of fans talking to you about it since the inception of the WWE Network?
Sure. What's really amazing, Steve, I've noticed in the last couple of years, I'll get, you know, 8, 10, 12-year-olds coming to the merchandise table, and, you know, they want to get a picture and an autograph, and they come up and, you know, their eyes pop open and they'll say, oh, you're my favorite wrestler. And I laugh because, I mean, I wasn't active on the national level, you know, by the time they were even thought of. And it's because of the social medias, the YouTubes and the Apple TV and all the rest of this stuff, and this primarily the WWE Network, that people can now go back and watch that footage, and it's as fresh today as it was in 1993, 4, or 5. And it really is generating a new generation of fan. So, yeah, there's a lot of that with the fans, not just the youngers, but you also get a lot of fans coming back and that may have been there or watched it initially, like, say, the Bell Throwdown. And they come up and they talk about it almost as if it happened yesterday or last week, and it was over 2 decades ago. Hard to believe, but sure. Yeah, it's had a big impact on the business.
Do you think a product like ECW could survive in the world of wrestling today?
There's so many variables that go into it. I think anything that succeeds at the time it succeeds is a beneficiary of its time. ECW, when it came into being, you have to remember that the wrestling business, by proxy of WCW and WWF at that time, had gone to Cartoon Land, much like it has today. Mm-hmm. So the parallels are very striking between then and now. The difference was the wrestling business hadn't gone as deeply into the lows. You know, wrestling's always got highs and lows, like any industry does. But I don't think the business has seen this much loss or deep of a low as we're in right now. You know, 15 years ago, there were somewhere between 48 and 52 million fans watching wrestling every week. And now we're down to, I think, what is it, 3.5 million, give or take. And that means a hell of a lot of fans have left the industry. And I think it's because of the lack of competition, the style that's being put out there. And so when ECW started, clearly, you know, it was a reaction to what they were getting from WCW and WWF at that time.
Sure. Now, have you heard about any of the comparisons which people are placing ECW to NXT? How, you know, NXT now is pretty much what the fans want to watch than the main roster, if you will. Have you heard about that at all?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's, I've watched it and I've seen, I don't watch it weekly or anything, but I've seen, you know, vast portions of it. They were very fortunate at the time that they made that move into the imagination of the fan base that Dusty Rhodes was down there. And, Dusty, if Dusty knew nothing else, he knew how to build characters and storylines. And, he was doing that. And those kids down there with all the athleticism they had, it goes back to what I'd said earlier. You know, you see now suddenly in that little microcosm called NXT, they've got a guy like Dusty Rhodes that understands how to do that and has that both feet planted in the old school. And those kids took to it like sharks to blood and the product they created. So, yeah, I think that NXT, although nothing similar to ECW in style, certainly has captured that imagination like ECW did in the 90s.
You've always been outspoken in the world of wrestling. What are some of the big issues you see in the business today?
You know, the big one to me right now, and I think it's most timely because of the, you know, as we're going into the WrestleMania season, you see all these injuries in wrestling. I asked Kevin Sullivan last week, you know, how many matches he thought he had in his career. And he said he had, like, a couple of years before that had, like, you know, done a rough estimate. And he said he figured he had over 30,000 matches in his career. And I asked him, I said, how many serious injuries did you have? I'm not talking about, you know, a broken finger or stitches or, you know, serious injuries, a ripped ligament, a broken bone, something that he physically couldn't wrestle. He said one. In the last match of his career, he was working with a kid that, you know, made a mistake and did something to his neck. That's a pretty astounding figure, you know, 30,000 times and no serious injury. And yet today you see, you know, the WWE, just decimated with,
serious injuries. Cena out, Orton out, Seth Rollins out. You know, so those types of injuries, as wrestlers, we're commodities to the company that we work for. And so if you're injured, just like in any professional sport, if you're injured and sitting on the sideline, you're not selling tickets, you're not exciting the fans and having an impact on the product and the bottom line. So to me, that's one thing. And I think that stems from the training. Today, any dog that can Harry can buy a ring and set it up and open a wrestling school. The question I would have is, what would qualify somebody to be a wrestling coach or open a school? At the time that I started going, there were some of those. Fortunately, I met Dominic Panucci at a very young age, and Dominic had a pretty strong pedigree in the business. But there was also another school in Pittsburgh that was opened by a guy that had, worked, I guess, as an underneath guy in a few local independent shows. And suddenly he had a school full of kids learning to be wrestlers, supposedly. And, if you don't know your crap, I'm not a mechanic by a long shot, but I could buy a garage and buy some tools and put a sign up, and you bring your car to me, doesn't know how to fix it properly. And I think that's a big, big thing in the business today.
We have a fan question from @CoachSoderling. He asks, it was said that you were to become the WCW champion before it closed. How is that going to play out? And did they already have any storylines in place for you? And do you know if those plans, when did those plans change to Booker T and Scott Steiner having the belt? I don't know if there's anything you can answer for him.
Well, there was always a lot of talk down there about, they were, WCW at the time that I was there really was in a mess. I mean, it was, as we now look back and know, it was dying. The company had lost their Time Warner or AOL, whichever it was at the time, had lost interest in it. But when I went there, I know that Bischoff was very high on doing stuff with the character. I know Vince Russo was very high on doing stuff with it. And I think right around that same time, is when they decided to put the Revolution together and go with that. And I think that was to be like the stage that would set, for these four characters to start to dominate. And then the franchise character would ascend out of that.
Sure.
I don't know as far as when that went off to the side or if it ever did go off to the side or was forgotten there, as opposed to just the company got sold.
Also, he wants to know, will you ever get a pro wrestling tee shop? His mother threw away his original ECW franchise shirt when he was moving, and he'd like another one. So,
well, it's funny because I get asked that question so often. I try to carry as many T-shirts on the road with me as I can, and that gets problematic just logistically. I do. I've been contacted several times by them, and I'm just so busy working on the new company that I just really haven't had time to sit down and contact the guy and do it. But if anybody out there wants a T-shirt, I know they could be gotten through my management at Shane Douglas Booking, no S at the end, ShaneDouglasBooking@gmail.com. We will try to get my webmaster is always complaining to me because he gets flooded with so many calls there and it's just one of those things that's probably going to be the easiest route to go to pro wrestling tees, and I will be doing so at some point.
Lightning round.
What is something people would be surprised to know about you?
That I love politics.
Has your views on pro wrestling changed since becoming a father?
My kids still have not seen ECW, so I think... I've become more cognizant of product being age-related.
All right. Since you have been acting as of late, what is your favorite movie and actor or actress?
My favorite movie? Currently, I just watched the movie Love and Mercy. It's called Love and Mercy about Brian Wilson and the Beach Boys. And just, John Cusack and I forget the other kid's name, Paul Dano. Just play amazing roles. Play him 20 years apart. Both in all, my favorite actor is Bryan Cranston. I think Breaking Bad, he was just astounding in. And Trumbo is great in. Actress, let me think here. There's so many great accesses out there right now, but, you know, I would say, the girl in Mad Max, Charlize Theron. She's beautiful and really has the chops.
What do you hope to be remembered for in professional wrestling?
As somebody that tried to learn his craft and wanted to entertain people and tried to maintain the veracity of the sport of wrestling.
All right. Favorite person to ever wrestle?
Terry Funk.
Who's a person you just never felt chemistry with in the ring?
Sandman and I never had a real good chemistry.
All right. Well, Shane Douglas, thank you so much. For all the fans listening, be sure and meet him and see him on March 11th and 12th at ECPW, GCW, and the Wrestling Universe. Once again, for more information, head on over to ESSpromotions.com. Shane Douglas, thank you so much.
Wow, thank you, man. Appreciate it.
All right. We want to thank Shane Douglas, the franchise, for coming on the show today. Be sure to check him and Gangrel out this weekend, March 11th and 12th, as they travel around with ESS Promotions. You know, we try our hardest to find the greatest talent to come on the show, and like we said, next week is no different. You will get to hear from the man, the vampire warrior, Gangrel. You know, please spend your time on social media. Talk to us. Let us know what you like about the show, what you don't like about the show. As we mentioned earlier, you can find everything out about us on anotherwrestlingpodcast.com. So tune in, and thank you so much for listening.
Today's show is brought to you by...
All right, Steve, if you know me like you think you do, you know that I am a huge professional wrestling fan. We all are. That's why we're here right now talking about this, but... sometimes it's hard to find original, cool pro wrestling memorabilia. Do you agree?
I agree.
Okay, well, I have the cure for the common wrestling merchandise, and that is ProWrestlingCrate.com. If you've never seen ProWrestlingCrate.com, they are a monthly subscription of exclusive shirts and collectibles for pro wrestling fans, handpicked by the biggest names in professional wrestling. Now, we've been fans of PW Crate for a very long time. They had a Mick Foley box. They had a Blue Meanie box. Kayfabe News box. Last month was the 80s. And if you sign up before March is over, you can get Mania Crate. Now, what's special about this crate is it has two shirts in each crate instead of the normal one. You know, it's just an amazing, amazing company. We love the people over at Pro Wrestling Crate. They're always going out of their way to try to surprise the fans and give them what they want. If you want exclusive sneak peeks of what's going on in each crate, you can go and follow them at Pro Wrestling Crate on Instagram. You can go to facebook.com/PWCrate, and you can also follow them on Twitter at PW Crate.
Also, check out ManiaCrawl.com. ManiaCrawl is an annual event that coincides with the biggest pro wrestling show of the year, WrestleMania. ManiaCrawl brings hundreds of wrestling fans from around the world together for one jaw-dropping, eyebrow-raising, trail-blazing bar crawl. Through the use of social media, various wrestling fan sites, and the overwhelming support of the pro wrestling community, Mania Crawl has grown to serve over 1,000 fans across three different cities, New Orleans, San Jose, and New York City. Their event is 100% free for the fans by the fans, with the goal of raising money for Connor's Cure and the Children's Hospital. This year's event will be held down in Dallas, Texas. Make sure you follow them on Twitter and Instagram. And to stay up to date with everything on Mania Crawl, head on over to ManiaCrawl.com.
Well, that's the show. We want to thank you all for listening today.
Every week we do this show free of charge for you, the fans.
If you're wondering how to repay us, we have just the thing.
Subscribe to us on iTunes, and while you're there, be sure to rate us and give us a good review.
And if you're looking for more information about AWP, then head on over to anotherwrestlingpodcast.com.
We are all over social media, and you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and more.
And if you're an AWP super fan, you can go show your support by going over to prowrestlingtees.com and buying one of our official AWP shirts.
We couldn't do the show without you, so tune in next week for
another wrestling podcast.